I'm joined now by Steve Sparks. Steve is a former Royal Marine who's aiming to become the first visually impaired man to row the Pacific. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Barry. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yourself?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Now, before we talk about this epic challenge, can you tell me a little bit about your life, please, and your career in the Marines?
I grew up in South Devon, went to a local school, Totnes, left school, not really sure what I wanted to do, and I started roof tiling, and my boss at that time was an ex-naval rating, and he told me that I couldn't spend the rest of my life on a building site, and I should join the armed forces. So in a moment of stupor, I went off, and the first recruitment office I walked into was the Navy stroke Royal Marines.
Okay.
And at that time, I hadn't realised I chose to join one of the most elite fighting forces, the Royal Marines. And that was the start of my life, my career, should I say. Well, I've always been well sporty, up for a challenge. So the Royal Marines really suited me. And initially, I became a winner of the King's Badge, the most outstanding recruit in training. And that propelled me with my career, basically. So, yeah, I was doing well in the Royal Marines. My career was flying. We'd come back from the Falklands campaign, and I volunteered for SBS, Special Boat Squadron. I went on the course. It's a very hard course. It's designed to be hard. Obviously, they want to bring the best out of you.
Yeah, can I interrupt you, Steve? Is that the Special Boat Service? They're a bit like the SAS. I'm sure I watched a documentary about them. Are they not like the elite, the best of the best?
Yeah, SAS is the Army's equivalent, and the SBS is the Navy, so Royal Marines equivalent. The SBS, in my day, was 300 strong, and the SBS, well, they got two regiments.
You must have been at your physical peak, Steve.
Yes, I was, definitely. I often think back, but then again, you can't think back to how fit I was. I've got to think about how fit I am, but
sure.
Yeah, I was fit.
At the height of your career, things took an unexpected turn, though, didn't they?
I was involved in a diving incident in the Royal Marines when I was going SB. It's quaint, and you have to try out these rebreathers, basically. You're breathing through neat oxygen. That's
okay.
All you're breathing, neat oxygen,
yeah.
And you exhale carbon dioxide, which is absorbed by sodium-lined crystals. So basically, there's no bubbles. When I was trialing it, or on the quaint, I suffered tightness of the chest and serious head pains. I withdrew myself from the actual water, and I was told to go back in again, so what they call wet my suit down. I went back in again, and I had a double dose of this stuff. After about another 15 minutes, the alarm signal went, and I came to the surface again with the symptoms, and I was told to swim ashore. I got ashore, and there was ambulances there, and we were rushed off to a Poole and Dorset Royal Infirmary, four of us. After 24 hours, we were cleared as fine. It was shortly after that, some 3 months later, when I returned to actually start the course because I'd gained selection, that I noticed late in the evenings when we were doing our study that I couldn't read. To cut a long story short, it seemed the starvation of oxygen seemed to trigger macular deterioration in my eyesight. But for me, the Royal Marines was my life, so I didn't dare tell anyone I was having problems with my eyesight.
Sure.
So I went and saw an optician, and he told me I had a lazy left eye and that I should wear a patch over my right eye to make my left eye work. With that in mind, I went off, withdrew myself from the specialist course I was on because I didn't want them to know I had problems with my eyesight, with a view to coming back on the course 12 months later when hopefully my eyesight would have rectified itself. But that's at least what I believed at the time. As time went by, I realised that my eyesight certainly wasn't getting any better. And I tried, because I'd passed several courses, one being a junior command course, I thought if I could find a smaller course, something like a signals course, I could perhaps get myself promoted to full corporal and find myself a nice little comfortable desk job somewhere. But that wasn't to be. When I attempted to get onto a signals course, I used to have a small magnifying glass and a pencil torch that I used to use to assist myself in reading, and I got caught out. And when I was sent to the medical centre, the game started. Nobody believed there was anything wrong with my eyesight, and this went on for about 12 months. And it was quite appalling, my discharge. Nobody believed me. Everyone thought I was trying to pull the cotton wool over their eyes, looking for a medical discharge. Well, they couldn't have been any further from the truth. I was passionate about being a Royal Marines, and I was robbed of it.
That must have left you feeling rather bitter, Steve.
I was very bitter. I had nothing. You know, when you're flying in the Royal Marines, you're great. But when you go wrong, you know, it's different today, but in the 80s, it was just nothing in place to support us.
It'd be hard enough losing your sight, Steve, but the career you've got ahead of you, your feelings for the armed forces and for them to kind of shun you, it must have been devastating.
It was. In fact, after a while, they gave me a job on a range because they didn't believe there's anything wrong with me. So they put me on straight point ranges down in Devon. And obviously, I couldn't see the radar, let alone see if there was anything out at sea on the range arcs. So they decided to put me in front of a medical officer's orderly room, whereupon I was brought in front of a guy called Commander Rick Jolly, who sadly just recently passed away. Well, I had dealings with him through minefields that I patrolled on when we had to take a couple of lads back with sadly lost limbs, lower limbs. And he remembered me, funnily enough. Mm-hmm. He said, what's this I'm reading about you? What is it? I said, well, no one seems to believe there's anything wrong with my eyesight, sir. He said, well, how long have you been like this? I said, it's nearly 18 months now, sir. He said, really? He turned round to one of the medical attendants and chief petty officers and said, where's his ophthalmic report? They said, it must be in the file there, sir. So they started shoving him through the file. So he looked up at me and said, Corporal Sparks, have you seen an ophthalmic specialist? And I went, no, sir. So he then, and I quote, turned round to these all his medical support workers and said, you've treated, and I quote, you've treated this man like a piece of meat hanging in a butcher's shop. They'd all assumed that I was pretending to have bad eyesight and no one had referred me to an ophthalmic specialist. So that afternoon I was driven from Exmouth, Limpston Commando, to Hasler in Portsmouth, whereupon within 2 hours of seeing an ophthalmic specialist, he said, you have a serious condition with your eyesight. I don't know what it is. I've never seen nothing like it before. He said, we're going to have to do a lot of tests to try and diagnose what it is. To be fair, they gave me 12 months sick leave because they didn't know what to do with me. And, you know, if I know now what I should have known then, you know, maybe I should have sued them for the way they treated me. But I'm not bitter and twisted now. You know, life's gone on. The Royal Marines welfare support system is fantastic. So it's good.
So from being so disappointed, your life will take another strange turn because it's actually a support group for ex-servicemen that changed your life and meeting a special lady. Can you talk about that, Steve, please?
I was in Malta. My travels took me to Malta with a job, and there was a lady called Mrs. Bloomer. She must have been in her 70s. Lovely lady. She'd heard about my struggle with my vision, and she came along to visit me and made me aware of an organisation or charity known as St. Dunstan's. And I said, well, I'd never heard of them. She said, well, they're actually looking for you because you're entitled to some rehabilitation training. And I said, well, what's it all about? And she said, do you mind if I get them to phone you? So that lovely lady introduced me to Blind Veterans, which is what it is today. St. Dunstan's been rebranded to Blind Veterans. And I spoke to one of their gentlemen, and they invited me back to Brighton, whereupon I was introduced to all sorts of technology, talking computers and things. I could actually see a picture enlarged of my daughter's face and stuff.
What year was this, Steve?
It was in the 90s, 92 actually, 92. This organisation, Blind Veterans, basically restructured my entire life and they put me on the right track again. I was like derailed, if you like, and up and running again with opportunities, and I've basically gone through life now with the support and direction that Blind Veterans can offer.
Do you use an aid like a cane or a guide dog, Steve?
I don't have a guide dog because I'm very active with stuff out there. So.
Sure.
But I do use a symbol cane when I'm not in Exmouth. Where I live, I know every street corner, I know every curb, I know every lamppost.
Yeah.
So I tend not to use a cane in Exmouth. Well, I don't. When I go away to foreign territories, well, I basically have no idea. Yeah, I use a cane. I use a symbol cane because I can see within like 2 to 3 metres of shapes within my little circle of vision. But I never know what the shape is. Because I've had perfect sight, my brain seems to be able to put the shape to a form, if you know what I mean. Brain seems to do the communicating mm-hmm. with the vision, and it tells me to avoid that, or that's something, or that's that.
It's interesting you say that, Steve, because I was interviewing a lady the other day, and she mentioned she doesn't use an aid just because her other senses have been heightened since her sight diminished, which I found strange, but you're saying something similar.
Barry, what it is, because you get on with it so well, my hearing is so astute. I can hear cars coming. I can hear things. So that's how I cross the road. I can go to a cash point. Cash point machines, NatWest, are designed for blind people and deaf people. But people, I can hear people say comments like, he's not blind. I saw him cross the road the other day. But they don't clock the fact that you've crossed over at the same time as somebody else has.
Yeah.
Or you're using a cash point machine. You're trained to use that cash point machine. People are quite ignorant to the fact of what blindness is. They think blindness is you're totally blind. They don't understand the spectrum of sight and what the values and levels of sight that we all have. So that's why I choose not to use a cane, to be fair.
Now, the armed forces has been a huge part of your life. And then in another ironic twist, it's blind veterans that has led you to your next challenge. Can you tell the listeners about that, please?
Well, another former Royal Marine called Mick Dawson, who I'm going to be doing this challenge with, I actually met Mick in a local pub in Rottingdean called the Coach House, and it turned out that he recognised me. Obviously, I didn't see his face, and I served with his brother. His brother passed out of training with me, and Mick came down to our pass-out parade. So we basically met, and he's an experienced rower. He's rowed the Atlantic twice, and he's the only man to paddle, or row, sorry, from Japan to Golden Gate Bridge.
In the Guinness Book of Records as well, I believe.
Yes, he is. So he's an experienced chap. Now, through him, he said, how would you fancy being the first blind man to cross the Pacific? I went, what? And at the same time, we can help blind veterans with some awareness and raise some charity money. And that's how it basically came around.
So when is the race?
It starts on June the 2nd, Monterey Bay, across to Honolulu.
And how many days will you be at sea?
Well, the record at the moment is 55 days for a two-man crew, but they reckon it can take up to 85 days. We are competitive. Obviously, our background with this, you pick that. We're going out there to try and compete and take it as it comes.
How many people will be competing?
Well, there's up to 20 boats at the moment that have entered. There's four-man crews and two-man crews. I don't know exactly how many are in our class at the moment because there's still teams entering. But it is a multinational thing.
Now, Steve, looking at your vessel, the boat is called Bojangles, I believe. It doesn't look very big. Now, Mick's in the Guinness Book of Records. I'm sure you're in safe hands. But just describe the boat to the listeners, please.
It's got a six-foot beam. That's 6 foot wide, which obviously is at the widest point, and it's 21 foot long. It's got a small cabin at the front for storing our water and survival kit, radio, VHF. And then we have like a rowing platform with all the sealed units, where we store everything watertight. So we have a rowing deck, and there's only one of us rowing at any one time. And then at the back of the boat, the stern of the boat, we've got a cabin that's about 6 foot long, and it thins out, narrows out at the back. So it's about 5 foot wide, and that's where if we get into terrible waters and it gets a bit rough, we put out what they call a sea anchor, and we'll be not asleep, but we'll be getting bounced around in the back of this cabin. So it's going to be quite tight.
Exhilarating and terrifying at the same time, I'm sure.
Yeah, those sort of things I'm trying to blank out, but all my friends and that, they're all joking about sharks and things like, you know, and whales and all sorts of things. But, you know, like I said, Mick's experience, he knows how to deal with these seas. He knows how to put out sea anchors. I've got a lot to learn. I've just done Sea Survivor with him. I'm off again next week to do a VHF course. And I've got to do a first aid course because we've got to get all our tickets up to date to do the race.
How much are you looking to raise?
For both charities, we're looking to raise £100,000, £50,000 for each charity.
What's the other charity? Sorry, you've got blind veterans and also?
Royal Marines Charities.
Okay.
Yeah, they're the ones that gave me the experience of life, trained me up to take on something like this, you know, the confidence in life.
Yeah.
And to be fair, you know, although I lost my sight through my Royal Marines service, they were the ones that trained me and gave me the ability to take on my little difficulty in life, if you know what I mean.
It's just a way of repaying them in some small way.
Yeah, exactly. You've got it, Barry.
Now, if this goes well, which I'm sure it will, plan on doing anything else along these lines? Another thing is we often get people on that do these challenges and they become a bit addictive, Steve.
Yeah, I think that's what's happened to Mick, the
Sounds
guy I'm
like
rowing with. This is his fourth attempt. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Barry. At the end of the day, I'm in my 50s now, mate, and as you know, things start to slip a bit.
Yep.
And this has come at a time in my life where I can get a bit more discipline back into my life, focus on training, getting myself shipshape to take on this challenge. Who knows what happens after it? As long as we complete it, that's the important thing, and we can raise some money and do some good and create awareness for the charities that we're working for.
If anyone would like to contribute, how can they do so, Steve?
We've got a website. It's at www.cockleshell-pacific. So that's www.cockleshell-pacific. There's giving pages there and stuff, and there's a full layout of an overview of the actual competition and our input.
And is Mick going to be taking some pictures along the way as well?
Yes, we've got a digital marketing company following us, actually, and the idea is that when we're at sea, we're going to actually be locked in. We're going to be able to have some telephone communications or radio communications.
Excellent. What advice would you give to anyone that's listening that's maybe going through sight loss or hard times?
Never look back. Always look forward. There's always something out there. It's a difficult thing. There's always somebody worse off. And can I just say, you know, with blind veterans, they've opened the doors. There's people out there that probably aren't aware that they're entitled to support from blind veterans. Yeah. If there's anyone out there that has got sight loss through macular degeneration, anything, and if they've done national service, it doesn't have to be active service. If they've signed for the Green Shilling, they should contact blindveterans.com because they might well be entitled to some support out there. You meet new comrades. I've seen an incident recently in blind veterans with two old boys sat at the bar. The last time they saw each other was in 1948, and they've both gone blind through natural causes, through old age, and they reunited themselves at the bar in Brighton in our centre. How small a world is that?
Fantastic story. Yeah. Steve Sparks, thank you very much for talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio. Good luck with the row when June comes. Hopefully get you on to bask in your glory once you've finished. Thank you for talking to us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Okay, Barry, thank you very much.